Imagine you are piloting this incredibly heavy boat through a really crowded, narrow harbor.
Oh, stressful right from the start.
Right. You're tired, you're running late, and you just give in to this sudden impulse to, slam the throttle and speed up.
Yeah, just to get it over with.
Exactly. And you might get ahead for a second, but without even realizing it, the massive wake you just created capsizes, like three smaller boats behind you.
Wow. Yeah, and eventually you're going to have to turn around and deal with all that wreckage, not to mention, probably repair the damage to your own hull.
Exactly. And that is exactly what we are looking at today in this deep dive. The hidden wakes we leave in our daily lives. I mean, we all have those mornings, right? Where you set the absolute best intentions. You tell yourself, today I'm going to be patient. I am going to be entirely present.
Oh, absolutely. But then the pressure hits.
Right. An email from your boss lands wrong, or, someone cuts you off in traffic, and suddenly all those noble intentions just vanish.
They really do. And in that heat of the moment, you find yourself reacting in ways that, well, deep down, you know it's just going to create a mess. A mess that you inevitably have to clean up later.
Which is really the core mission for our deep dive today. If you're listening right now and thinking about a time you let a compulsion or a frustrated impulse take the wheel, you are in the right place. We're taking this journey from abstract good intentions to real-world execution.
Yeah, how do we actually make sure our daily actions align with our values, especially when we are completely stressed out?
Exactly. So today we are exploring a really brilliant framework from Chapter 60 of the Raft to Freedom program. And this chapter is called Skillful Action, Handling Our Raft with Care.
Right. And just to give you a brief sense of where we are on this map, RAFT is actually an acronym.
Right. It stands for Recognize, Abandon, Feeling, Train.
Exactly. And the material we are diving into today sits squarely in that final stage, which is train.
Because the earlier stages of the RAFT program, they involve a lot of vital inner work, right? Like clarifying your perspective, feeling your emotions without getting totally overwhelmed by them.
Yeah, but this chapter, this is where the abstract becomes concrete.
We are moving from the inside out. It's
Now,
not just about what we think or feel anymore. It's about what we literally do with our hands, our feet, our energy and physical presence when that pressure is on.
exactly. We are talking about the physical reality of bodily conduct here. The RAFT program uses the teachings of Gotama, the Buddha, as a foundation.
Right.
And in Gotama's middle way program, skillful action is the fourth factor. Think of it as the operating protocol for daily life.
The operating protocol. I like that.
Yeah, it's the exact point where your values stop being, nice ideas floating around in your head and actually become visible to the rest of the world.
So, how do we actually handle this metaphorical raft we're floating on? Because the program talks about the five gifts, which are commitments like not harming life or not taking what isn't given. And it describes these as the foundational planks of the raft. But skillful action is the handling ability itself, right?
Yes, exactly. The planks are the material the raft is built from, but handling is how you steer. And the fundamental insight here is a kind of physics of integrity.
Physics of integrity. What does that mean practically?
Well, it means every single action you take does one of two things. It either adds drag to your life or it reduces drag.
Let's define drag, because I hear that word and I immediately think of aerodynamics or like swimming with your clothes on. What does drag feel like in daily life?
Oh, it feels like that knot in your stomach when you have to figure out how to apologize for a harsh text message you sent.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I know that feeling.
Right. It's turbulence, regret. It's
Nah.
the sheer exhaustion of having to do repair work because you crossed a boundary or, the vigilance of trying to keep a secret. That is all drag.
So when you act skillfully, you reduce that drag. You create ease and safety.
Exactly. The framework asks us to view restraint not as some Victorian concept of repression or punishment. It's simply care in motion.
Care in motion. So going back to our harbor analogy, restraint isn't about sitting at the dock terrified to move your boat. It's just good handling so you don't crash into the pier.
Yes, perfect way to put it.
So if restraint is just good handling, the RAFT program gives us four specific handling skills to practice. And I found the framing of these really unexpected. It doesn't call them moralistic rules.
No, it calls them permissions to live lightly.
Yeah, permissions to live lightly. That shift in language changes everything, doesn't it?
It really does, because when we think of ethical rules, we usually view them as these heavy obligations that weigh us down, right? Like they restrict our freedom.
Yeah, exactly.
But this framework suggests the exact opposite. Breaking boundaries is actually what weighs you down with debt and repair work.
So practicing these four permissions means you carry less guilt, you have fewer secrets to manage, and you literally leave less backwash behind you.
Exactly. So the first of these permissions is caring for life.
Which, on the surface, sounds like basic nonviolence, abstaining from harm.
It is the baseline of nonviolence, yeah. But it extends much further than that. It means treating all bodies as worthy of protection. And crucially, that includes your own body.
All right, I appreciate that inclusion. We often think of ethics as just how we treat others.
Right. But choosing responses that don't escalate into damage, that applies inward too. Pushing your body past its physical limits without rest, or, you know, feeding a harmful habit that chips away at your health, that is a failure to care for life.
Burning ourselves out is literally a form of harm. So if the first permission protects the physical boundaries, how do we handle the invisible boundaries?
That is where the second permission comes in, which is honesty with things. At its core, this means abstaining from taking what is not freely given.
So the obvious interpretation there is stealing physical objects. But the RAF program applies this to a much more subtle, modern context, doesn't it?
It does, because taking what isn't freely offered happens constantly in ways we barely even register.
Like what?
Well, it includes taking credit for a colleague's work. It includes manipulating a situation just to force someone to give you their attention.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, or crossing digital privacy boundaries, like reading someone's messages without consent. And a really common one, assuming access to someone's emotional energy.
Oh, vampiring someone's time or emotional reserves. I mean, we have all been on both sides of that.
Oh, absolutely.
You corner a friend to vent for 2 hours without checking if they actually have the capacity to hear it right then. You are taking emotional energy that wasn't explicitly offered. That creates an invisible turbulence.
It does. And over time, that turbulence degrades trust. But when you practice fair exchange and respect those invisible boundaries, your raft stays incredibly stable.
Because you aren't dealing with the turbulence of distrust, which leads right into the third handling skill, responsibility in intimacy.
Yes. This focuses on abstaining from sexual misconduct, which is undeniably an area where people can create massive wakes that swamp entire families and communities.
Yeah, intimacy is an area where vulnerability is at its absolute highest.
Exactly. Which means trust has to be protected with particular care. This permission is about ensuring intimacy is clean, mutual, and safe.
Meaning strictly avoiding the use of emotional leverage or charm or status.
Or secrecy. Using any of that to coerce someone. The guiding questions aren't just, is this allowed, but is this honest? Is this actually safe for everyone involved?
The program explicitly points out that when intimacy is handled carelessly, it leaves wreckage below the waterline. Shame, mistrust, broken confidence, those things are incredibly heavy to carry.
So heavy. And if you want to avoid adding that heavy drag to your life, you need the fourth and final permission to live lightly, which is clarity of mind.
Clarity of mind. That means refraining from intoxication.
Right. Yes, and it actually acts as the support column for the other three. Because when your clarity collapses, the leaks of harm, taking what isn't yours, and betrayal open up almost instantly.
We usually equate intoxication just with alcohol or drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But reading this, it feels much broader than that.
It is much broader. It's really about avoiding any state of mind that makes you careless.
Like what else?
Well, it includes noticing whatever mechanism you use to escape yourself so completely that you lose your sense of restraint. You might numb out with endless scrolling on your phone, or hyper-focusing on work to the point of dissociation.
Oh, doom scrolling is definitely an intoxicant for a lot of people.
Exactly. A clouded mind might feel like a relief from pressure in the heat of the moment, but you are basically handing the rudder of your raft over to blind impulse.
An impulse has absolutely no interest in where the raft actually ends up. I'm sort of stuck on this idea of the lazy path here.
How do you mean?
Well, it turns out, adhering to these four boundaries is actually the easiest option in the long run. Breaking them is like taking a shortcut on a hike because you think it's faster, but you end up getting completely lost in the woods, covered in scratches, and it takes you 3 times as long to get home.
That shortcut is an illusion. And, you know, living lightly isn't just some poetic or spiritual idea. It perfectly aligns with modern science regarding how our brains actually process habits.
Okay, I want to dig into the biology here.
Here.
What is actually happening in the brain when we are triggered and want to just lash out versus when we actually show restraint?
So we need to look at two different networks in the brain. Compulsions, ingrained routines, and automatic habits run on what are called corticobasal ganglia circuits.
Okay, hold on. Corticobasal ganglia circuits. Walk me through that. What part of the brain are we talking about?
Right, so the basal ganglia is this older, very efficient part of the brain situated deep near the center. Its whole job is to recognize patterns and turn them into automatic routines so your brain doesn't have to burn energy making the same decision twice. Ah, okay.
So when you repeat a behavior like reaching for your phone when you feel awkward or snapping defensively when you're criticized, it becomes wired into this circuit.
And then it just gets executed with zero deliberation.
Exactly. That is why, in a heated moment, your reaction feels like it is running entirely on its own.
Because it is. The autopilot has literally taken over to save energy. So where does the restraint come from?
Response inhibition, which is the physical ability to stop an action you've already initiated, runs on a completely different network.
Okay.
It relies heavily on the prefrontal cortex, which is the area right behind your forehead, responsible for complex decision-making, interacting with the basal ganglia. We can call this the frontobasal ganglia braking network.
A braking network. That is fascinating. We literally have a biological brake pedal for our impulses.
We do.
Yeah.
And the practical implication of knowing this anatomy is huge. It means when you feel overwhelmed by a compulsion or an urge, it is not that you have no control.
It is that your autopilot is firing faster than your brake pedal. You have to actively build a reliable interruption point. Every single time you pause, take a breath, and choose a harmless next step instead of the automatic one, you are sending a signal through that braking network.
So you're thickening that neural pathway. It's literally muscle memory for the brain.
Yeah.
Every time you pause, you are upgrading your brake pads.
And repetition builds reliability. The more you use the brake, the easier it is to access the next time. And, you know, we see this exact mechanism mirrored in psychology, too.
Really? Like where?
Particularly in a cognitive behavioral therapy technique called behavioral activation, or BA.
How does behavioral activation approach this?
BA relies on a very simple but profound reversal of how we normally think. Usually, we assume we need to wait until we feel motivated or calm before we can act instructively, right?
Yeah, we wait for the feeling to generate the action.
Exactly. But BA flips this. It treats action as a lever that changes your mood. When you engage in a small, specific, stabilizing action, it physically alters the reinforcement landscape of your mind.
Oh, I relate to that deeply. I will sit on the couch telling myself, you know, I will go for a walk as soon as I feel energized. But the energy never comes while I am sitting there. The energy only comes like 5 minutes into the walk.
Yes, the action creates the still of mind, not the other way around.
Wow.
And that's exactly the point here. Skillful action is essentially behavioral activation with an ethical compass. You don't have to feel perfectly serene to act skillfully. You just have to make the skillful movement, and the serenity eventually follows.
That makes so much sense. I imagine this concept of action preceding feeling is pretty universal across different philosophies, too.
It really is. The RAF program points out that this ties beautifully into various traditions. It references the secular Dharma teacher, Stephen Batchelor, who describes skillful action simply as practice in the world.
Practice in the world. I like that.
Yeah, it's how you behave under pressure when no one is watching. It also connects to the core clinical ethics principle of non-maleficence, which simply means do no harm.
Which has to be the baseline, right? Before we try to be a hero and do extraordinary good, our firm job is just to stop creating new damage.
Absolutely. The Stoics argued something very similar. Epictetus taught that true freedom is rooted only in what is actually ours to govern. We cannot control the external pressure, the angry boss, or the delayed train. We can only govern our choices and actions in response.
And didn't Aristotle say something similar about habits?
Yes. Aristotle famously observed that character is not something you are born with, it is formed by repetition. We are what we repeatedly do. Each clean act is practice in becoming a steadier person.
I see the theory, and the philosophy is beautiful, but let's get incredibly practical here.
Let's do it.
In real life, when the pressure is spiking, your heart is pounding in your ears, and your brain is flooded with adrenaline. Accessing Aristotle or your prefrontal cortex feels nearly impossible.
It really does.
So how do we actually practice handling in real time when we are actively getting pulled off course?
Well, The RAFT program doesn't leave us hanging with just theory. It gives us a highly practical six-step sequence. And the most important thing to remember before you even start is that you do not need to execute this perfectly.
That's a relief.
Right. You just need to stay oriented. When the moment is hot, you don't need a lecture. You need a protocol.
Okay, let's walk through the protocol. You are triggered. The impulse is rising. What is step one?
Step one, name the vulnerability. You have to pull the situation out of the abstract and state the concrete reality to yourself.
Like, how specifically?
Ask yourself, who or what could be harmed right now? Is it you? Is it a colleague? Is it trust? Is it consent? You have to keep it highly specific.
So instead of a vague, I'm so angry, you say, if I send this sarcastic email to my team right now, I am going to damage the psychological safety of this group.
Exactly. Naming it forces the prefrontal cortex to turn on.
Got it. What is step two?
Step two, settle the body. You check the feeling tone in your body. Is it pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral? And then you take three soft, extended out-breaths.
I want to know why the out-breath specifically. What is the mechanism there?
It is pure biology. When you extend your exhale so that it is longer than your inhale, you stimulate the vagus nerve.
The vagus nerve, right?
Yeah, that nerve sends a signal to your parasympathetic nervous system to physically lower your heart rate. It forces the body out of fight or flight mode because a steadier body handles the wheel of the rash infinitely better than a panicked one.
So three soft out breaths mechanically buy you the time your braking network needs.
Okay, so we are calm. We've named the vulnerability. What is step three?
Step three is using the mirror. You hold the action you are about to take up to three lenses based on those permissions we discussed earlier.
Okay, so asking, does this action care for life? Does this respect boundaries? Does this honor responsibility and intimacy?
Exactly. And if you look in the mirror and the answer is a resounding no, you move to step four, which honestly I think is the most liberating concept in this entire chapter.
Step four, choose the minimum effective step. Yes. You deliberately favor the absolute smallest kind action that reduces harm right in this moment.
I love this because when you are overwhelmed, you feel this immense pressure to solve the entire conflict right then and there. Like if you are arguing with your partner, you feel like you have to resolve your whole relationship dynamic before you go to sleep.
Yes, we put so much pressure on ourselves.
But the minimum effective step says you don't need to fix your whole life. You just need to choose the smallest move that changes the trajectory.
Mm.
Like, I am going to step outside for 10 minutes. Or I am going to drink a glass of water.
That is the beauty of it. You are just trying to reduce the drag and keep the boat from crashing.
Right.
And to set yourself up for success in the future, step five is about friction and ease. You systematically make harmful acts harder to execute, and you make wholesome acts easier.
How does manipulating friction actually change your behavior, though?
Well, it goes back to the basal ganglia looking to save energy. If you know you have a vulnerability, say a habit of mindlessly scrolling through negative news late at night, you add friction.
Oh, like charging your phone in the kitchen instead of next to your bed.
Exactly. You make the harmful action require more physical steps. And conversely, you add ease to the actions you want to take. You leave your walking shoes right by the front door.
So you engineer your environment to support your values so you don't have to rely purely on willpower.
Right. You are making the lazy path the healthy path.
But what happens when we inevitably mess up? Because we are human and we are going to crash the boat sometimes, the impulse will win.
Of course it will. And when it does, you move to step six, which is repair early.
Repair early.
Yeah, if there was a collision, you repair proportionally. You return what you took, you replace what you broke, you repay the debt, or you restore a boundary. And you do it while the issue is still small, before the wake spreads. Repairing isn't a failure of ethics. It is ethics continuing.
I imagine making the repair quickly also does something for our brain's muscle memory.
It absolutely does. Crucially, the act of repairing teaches the body what right feels like. The relief you feel after a sincere apology, that cements that ethical learning into your behavioral memory.
Because it makes the braking network more likely to engage the next time, since your brain remembers how uncomfortable the repair process was.
Yes, exactly.
So zooming out on all of this, we have covered the physics of drag, the four permissions to live lightly, the biology of the brain's braking system, and the six-step real-time protocol. What is the ultimate takeaway for the listener trying to navigate their own pressures?
I think the ultimate takeaway is that the body keeps the score of action. every single action leaves a trace on your nervous system.
Wow.
Secrecy, crossing boundaries, taking emotional energy that isn't yours.
Yeah.
These behaviors leave the body contracted. You walk around tense, vigilant, just waiting for someone to find out or for the other shoe to drop. But skillful action leaves the body remarkably simpler. When you handle your raft with care, you have nothing to hide. You have fewer loose ends to manage. This isn't about performing moral theater for other people. It is practical physics. You are fundamentally altering the conditions of the mind you have to live inside.
You are choosing a nervous system that can finally settle down.
Exactly.
Well, before we wrap up today's deep dive, we want to make sure you know how to access this material. The incredible concepts we've been exploring today come from the Raft to Freedom program. The workbook is written by Dr. Catherine Jacob and Vince Cullen, and they're doing something truly amazing by making the entire 66 chapters freely available online.
Yeah, it's such a gift.
You can find all of it, along with a link to their resources, at raft2freedom.org. It is a phenomenal guide for anyone looking to navigate life's turbulent waters with a bit more grace.
It truly is a comprehensive map for reducing the turbulence in our lives and steering with intention.
As always, we want to leave you with something to chew on as you go about your day. In the Raft program, each chapter ends with a space for self-reflection. So if you are listening right now, consider this question for yourself. When you are under pressure, which of the four handling skills is hardest for you to remember? Caring for life, honesty with things, responsibility and intimacy, or clarity of mind? And what is the specific pressure that usually pulls you off course?
It is such a vital question to ask if you want to understand your own autopilot.
Absolutely.
As you ponder how you navigate your own crowded harbor and how you might steer with a little less wake and a lot more care, we leave you with this final closing quote from the end of the chapter by Thich Nhat Hanh. My actions are my only true belongings. My actions are the ground upon which I stand.